racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
And good evening. Once again, we're back for another week of Inside Motorsport here on Triple S FM. Behind the panel tonight, we've got Colin Ford filling in for Craig Revell. Craig's taking the night off to do a few various bits and pieces. But joining us back from the USA after spending some time over there and having sent us a number of postcards about things going over there, Peter Norton, welcome back into the studio and back to Canberra, Peter.
Thanks very much, Colin. It's good to be back in Canberra. Well, it's a little chilly. I made the big mistake of going from winter into spring and now back here for another winter.
Oh, well, you're about to get it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in for a cold one. But anyhow, this weekend, if we start off with things, I think the main thing that's happening internationally around the traps, of course, is the Formula One season is getting underway, and of course, naturally enough, when we start talking Formula One, the man we talk to regarding Formula One is our Formula One correspondent, Rory Gordon. Good evening to you, Rory.
Good evening, Colin, and I'd like to say good evening to Peter, but I didn't hear a word he just said just then, so he's either his microphone's dead or something's gone wrong. Just thought I'd let you know about that. And while I'm doing it, I'd like to say congratulations to the Bundys for getting through to the Super 12 final, and to any of my old friends who were out there at Bruce Stadium last night, braving the cold, you silly fools. Well done. I thought I'd just throw in some quick notes since we're talking Formula One, well, peripherally, about Canberra's own Mark Webber. In the Formula 3000 race yesterday at Nürburgring, Mark qualified 11th. A bit further down the grid. I wasn't paying attention to my scribbled notes. In the first session, he was 11th. He qualified 16th, and then there was an almighty pile-up on the first lap at the first corner, and Mark got caught up in that, so he did absolutely nothing. Luckily for him, he's still in third place in the championship, although, of course, he's moving further back from the leader. That was just a passing note for you to go in there. Formula One, well, if you're looking for a wet race, this is going to be your chance tonight. In the warm-up this morning, when they started their warm-up, it had been raining, it was cold, it was pretty bloody horrible, really. I mean, it was something like 7 degrees at Nürburgring, and a lot of the cars didn't go out until fairly late. Just quickly running through the positions from the warm-up, Michael Schumacher had the best time at 120.454, which shows that the track was drying off considerably. Then Häkkinen, followed by Barrichello, and then hold on to your horses, hold on to your seats, Verstappen and De La Rosa, with Coulthard rounding out the top six. Then Frentzen, Alesi, Ralf Schumacher, Fisichella, Irvine, Button, Trulli, Salo, Deniz, blah, 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 down to Mazzacane in 21st place. Of course, we will not be seeing
Nick Heidfeld.
Thank you very much indeed, Colin. We won't be seeing Nick Heidfeld because he has been disqualified for the meeting because just after qualifying when they came in, his car was weighed. It was found to be overweight. And according to the rules, if that happens, you're out. Goodbye. Go home. Have an early shower. And so that's what happened. For the grid, just quickly, it's the usual thing of McLaren and Ferrari on the front two rows. Coulthard, Michael Schumacher, Häkkinen and Barrichello. They're then followed by Ralf Schumacher, Trulli, Fisichella, Irvine, Villeneuve, Frentzen, Button, De La Rosa, Verstappen, Bert, Deniz, Herbert, Alesi, Zonta, Salo, Genet and Mazzacane. And just to give you an idea of what sort of times we're looking at here, Coulthard's pole time was 17.5 seconds, whereas in the warm-up this morning, Michael Schumacher's time was 20.5 seconds. So it should be very interesting, and if the rain persists, I think there's quite a few of us out in the world who would be quite happy to see a wet race and to see the drivers really having to do some driving. It will, of course, as they always say, put it down to driver skill rather than the power of the engine. So we'll see things like Verstappen and De La Rosa might be in a chance of if not getting on the podium, at least getting some points.
Yeah, the typical case that if you do have a wet race, you have the possibility there of somebody who's got a very well set up chassis, might be down on horsepower with a custom engine, can actually shine in such conditions.
Exactly. I think to a certain extent I'm quite lover of wet races. I think it does show up the abilities of the drivers, and I think it's to a certain extent I suppose I'd almost like to see a water truck going around halfway through the race, through every race, call a break and stick the car behind the pace car, send a water truck out and wet the track, and then see what the drivers do with it, just to see how capable they are. I think that might be just going a little bit too far, so.
Or could we introduce the Goodyear blimp doing random water bombings around the track at certain points, pretending it's a big grey cloud?
Well, that would be very interesting, yeah. That's certainly a way to do it. It's something I didn't think of, and, why not? Mm. I mean, hundreds of helicopters up there. Why don't they have helicopters with things hanging off underneath, and they go around water bombing the track? Mm. That would be great fun.
Mm. Now, of course, this time of year, there's always seems to be something silly going on in Formula One. Of course, the last silly thing we had going on was the Benetton situation, where they've been taken over by Renault. But then the situation with Alexander Wurz, their driver, would they keep him, would they not keep him, and all the rest of it goes on. So Benetton, again, back under the control of Mr. Briatore, and fun and games has recommenced with Benetton.
Oh, yeah. Wearing his cap backwards, Flavio Briatore is back on pit lane in Formula One. I mean, he's never really been away because of his connections with Supertech. So, but he's back in with Benetton again. The particular situation with Wurz was, according to rumour, looking quite dire for Wurz until recently, and then. They went off and did the whole lot of teams went off and did some testing, and lo and behold, who turned up the fastest time? But Wurz. So it looked as though his position is safe for this race, and I Benetton have gone to the rather strange length of actually issuing a press release saying that their drivers, and this was a few days ago now, of course, almost 2 weeks ago, that their drivers for this race will be Wurz and Fisichella, which. It's rather an odd thing to do, to go and actually issue a press statement just for the one race, but that's what they've gone and done. And but of course the clear implication there is, yep, that's our drivers for this race, but who our drivers for the next race will be, it's another question altogether.
Of course, they'd be a little bit crazy, Benetton, to drop Wurz before the Austrian Grand Prix in July, because there's quite a number of Benetton sponsors who are based in Austria, who are looking to make some play out of their local boy in the race.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one Austrian in the field, and it doesn't really help to have him drop out for that one particular race, does it? So, it wouldn't be very good. It wouldn't be probably, and let's face it, Benetton, so they're probably a very very cunning about their marketing, so they wouldn't want to drop their one Austrian driver just for the coming up to the Austrian Grand Prix. So no, maybe they'll hang on to him for a while, maybe they'll get rid of him. Who are they going to get to replace him? Probably one of their junior drivers, but then they're going to have to break that driver in, so they're not going to get the results anyway. A wet race, I think, personally, I think it's just that the Benetton just aren't good enough and haven't been good enough since there's been the deluge, the post-Michael Schumacher outpouring of staff from Benetton. They just haven't got the get-up and go, so I don't think you can blame the drivers. I think it's more a question of the team and the team management have to realise that if they're going to be back in the top line again, as they were when Michael Schumacher was there, they're going to have to pour an awful lot of money into it. So that's my take on it anyway.
Now, of course, one of the people that is out there that Murray Walker is following with great interest is young Jenson Button with the Williams team. Of course, he's a man who's definitely, his position in Formula One is definitely under threat, because the word this week that Frank Williams has actually opened contract talks with kart champion Juan Pablo Montoya, and that means that he could be on, Jenson Button could only be here as a temporary person.
Yeah, well, this is something I sort of, I'm going to bang my own trumpet here. Blow my own trumpet here, then bang my own drum. This is something I mentioned months ago here, that the very cunning move by Williams to sign Jenson Button. If he proves to be good, all well and good. Gosh, what foresight they've got. If he proves to be bad, well, it's going to be remarkably cheap to buy him out of his contract because he's nothing and he's nobody. So, a good move. There have been considerable rumours about Williams and Montoya and so on and so forth. Just as equally, there have been considerable rumours that Montoya has said that he has no such contract. Further rumours also state that there is a section in his current contract with Chip Ganassi which says that should he get signed by a Formula One team, he has to pay Chip Ganassi rather a lot of money. So there's all sorts of permutations and combinations here. Personally, I think Jenson Button has turned out to be the revelation of the season so far. He's certainly done much better than anybody anticipated. Williams, and in particular BMW, have done much better than anybody anticipated. So I think, to a certain extent, Button's position is safe. But in Formula One, and when it comes to drivers, who knows what birth the situation is, and really we'll just have to wait until the end of the traditional end of season time when Williams will announce their drivers for the following season.
Now, of course, the other thing that's going to complicate things for the next season, before this one's even finished, is the return of Michelin as a Formula One tyre supplier. Now, they've been out doing some testing, getting things organised, ready for the 2001 season when they will make their return. We've had people like Jordan announce that they'll stay with Bridgestone, and of course we've got other people like Toyota who have yet to enter Formula 1 saying they'll go with Michelin, Williams saying they'll go with Michelin, so it's already starting to appear that the good old days of tyre competition will add some more spice to Formula 1 once again.
Oh yes, and I have to be honest, I am really looking forward to it. I think this is something that Formula 1 really needs. We've had the promises of the Groove tyres were that there were all sorts of promises coming out from Groove tyres and by having one manufacturer, a tyre manufacturer. Let's face it, Formula One racing has not changed with Groove tyres. It's still, to someone who's not into motorsport, or even those who are into motorsport but not into Formula One, is still just as boring as ever. It's just car following car following car. There was all sorts of technical talk about, oh yes, well it would widen the by narrowing the cars and doing this and that and switching to the Groove tyres, it would widen the track on the circuit so that rather than everyone having to go in one particular line on the circuit, there would be multiple lines. Well, all you have to do is look at the pictures coming out of the circuits, and you can see that there's still marbles all over the place from the tyres. So the tyres haven't changed to me that much. And I think a bit of tyre technology is going to liven things up. Much more than that, though, I prefer to see some major changes to the circuit so that we get overtaking coming in much more, and the ability to overtake rather than having to sit behind another car for ages and ages. And I think one of the ways we're going to do that is to change the circuits considerably so that there are many more braking and accelerating zones with nice long straights. So it's just one of my pet theories for the moment.
Well, that's a good theory. I'm sure that what we'll hopefully see is some, you know, a bit more competition, a bit more interest come back in with the new tyre manufacturer. A lot of teams and drivers have been saying that they prefer to go back to the days of less aerodynamics and more mechanical grip through wider tyres, etc. Getting very much back to what it was, say, the early 1980s, where aerodynamics were a minimal thing, and the mechanical grip you had meant the driver, you know, could slide the car around, and there were some real overtaking moves seen during those days.
Oh, yeah, I think a lot of the fans who, when it all comes down to it, are the people who pay for Formula One. A lot of the fans would like to see that too. But how do you do it? How do you get rid of aerodynamics? You can't get rid of aerodynamics. They're there. Legislating to get rid of aerodynamics, to me, is something that is nigh on impossible, because the designers will always find a way around the rules or bend the rules to their own particular interpretation. Really, part of the answer suppose I'd like to see is something that you've mentioned there, is go back to wider tyres, go back as well to slicks, and go back perhaps to wider cars, so that that might do something. And one of my favourites, something I've been thrashing now for years, is banned pit stops. Just pit stops are finished. So I'd like to see that's sort of my, along with changes to circuits, my gumble of how Rory would improve Formula One for what it's worth.
Well, I'm sure if there's a certain number of people out there listening, Rory, to you, we'd probably see some more good competition back in Formula One, where currently I think it's starting to face the problem that everybody in certain teams is so far up the front is the same to each other. It's not funny. But anyhow, what are your picks for tonight's European Grand Prix from the Nürburgring?
Oh, given it's probably going to be wet, I'm going to have to go for Michael Schumacher. And then I'll go for a bit of a punt after that. I'll say Ralf Schumacher will do well. I think the Williams, and it's, you know, de facto home crowd, and the Williams BMW will be brought up to the top level, if you like, or the top level will be brought back to them because it is wet. And purely sentimentally, totally out of sentiment, no other reason whatsoever, I'd like to see a Jaguar on the podium. Just to sort of shut the doubters, like me, up, I'd like to see a Jaguar on the podium and Jaguar with some points in the bag. I think it'd be it's important to Formula One for Jaguar to be seen to be doing something.
Well, thank you very much for that one, Rory. I think it sounds like an interesting sort of finishing podium that we'd see from the Nürburgring. I think there's a lot of people out there still hoping very much that Jaguar can get their act together. And no doubt we'll have a chat to you soon regarding one of the up-and-coming Formula One Grand Prix. If I say, what have we got after the Nürburgring?
I never think beyond the next race. So I haven't thought beyond tonight. I've only thought of Nürburgring, Europe, tonight, and I haven't even thought beyond that. You've got totally utterly thrown me, Colin.
Monaco, I think, is next up in the field.
Monaco must be coming up very, very soon. It's that time of year for Monaco, yet. Mm. So Monaco must be looming, which is, of course, one of my absolute favourite Grand Prix, because if the driver doesn't get it absolutely right, if he doesn't get the setup of the car right, if he doesn't tell his team what he wants done, and if he doesn't drive completely properly, then he's lost the car. He's going to lose time in a circuit where time is absolutely vital. So, a great to look forward to.
Well, thanks very much for that, Rory, and as I say, we'll be in contact with you soon to catch up with things getting ready for the Monaco Grand Prix.
My pleasure, Colin. Good night.
Good night. Good night to Rory Gordon. And Peter, you've got the news for us on exactly what happened there with Mark Webber over there at the Nürburgring in the Formula 3000 race.
Yes, that's right. Our Queanbeyan local lad, he actually copped a double whammy at the beginning of that race, which was the fourth round of the Formula 3000 championship, and it forced him out of the race, but he does remain third in that series. He was crashed into twice on the opening lap of the bizarre race at the Nürburgring. 7 of the 30 cars were actually eliminated on that very first lap, and much of the race was run behind the safety car because of the crashes, various spins and rain. Webber was the innocent victim of a skirmish in which his Arrows car was hit from behind and tipped into a half spin as he tried to make up ground from his very disappointing 16th position. He was then hit by another car which ran over his right front wheel, damaging the wheel and suspension, effectively putting him out of the race. Brazilian Bruno... this is a good name. Bruno Junqueira.
Bruno Junqueira.
That's it. He's a fellow who narrowly missed out on that Williams Formula One drive to Englishman Jenson Button. He ended up winning his second straight race, and he extended his lead in the championship. In terms of the championship, which is, of course, what we're looking for Mark Webber, Junqueira has 28 points. Frenchman Nicolas Minassani, who failed to finish at this last race, has 16 points, and Mark Webber, of course, didn't add to his points tally. He's back on 14th, on 14 points. So he's still got a fair way to go, but luckily he's not slipping any further back than the 13th position. Quote from Mark was that two bad races on the trot was a very, very bad thing for him, and he said that if you qualify poorly, it's very hard to stay out of trouble in the middle of the pack in these races.
Yeah, so unfortunately not so well there for our man Mark Webber at running into the old thing that you sort of have a couple of early good races and things start to go wrong. But hopefully at this point in time on the line from England we've got our man in the UK who's just returned from the climes of Argentina watching that man Richard Burns win down there in his Super Impreza 2000 Evolution. Greg Strange, good evening to you, Greg, and how was it over in sunny Argentina, I hope?
Sounds to be a fine thing. It was wet throughout. It was a very, very wet Rally Argentina, and of course the final day, which is held up in the foothills of the Andes, we're at sort of 6,000-7,000 feet, which for those of us who normally live at sea level is a bit of a trek, and we were really in clouds throughout the day, and it was not a case of not being able to see the cars coming through the stages. It was quite difficult to see the car next to you in the service area. So how people like Burns and Co. were managing to maintain the speeds that they were through the stages, well, frankly, I just don't know. I think they're on a different planet. But six rounds of the World Championship gone. Burns has won three of them. He leads the World Championship by some 14 points. And he's already starting, I think, to look like a champion. Champion in waiting at this stage. We've got eight rounds to go, but heck, he's putting in a terrific performance.
Now, of course, Richard has been one of those people that's been just on the edge of things. It was last year he finally started to really break through, and of course he's been assisted greatly by this latest evolution of the Super Impreza that the ProDrive team have put together for him.
Yeah, that's right. They're based at Banbury in just to the north of Oxford in England, and the company, of course, run by David Richards, who's also just taken over the broadcasting rights from Bernie Eccleston. So at the moment, all kinds of things are happening up at the ProDrive company. But let's talk about the car for a start, because they reckon they've been working on it for more or less a couple of years, and it's a very quick car indeed. And what's particularly good is the time they've got at the moment with Pirelli. Subaru, one of the two teams, other being Fairs, who uses the Pirelli tyres, the others are all Michelins this year. And, well, frankly, Pirelli have got the edge at the moment. They were outstanding during the Safari Rally. Burns and his teammate, Ewan Kankanen, went right through the Safari Rally without a single puncture. While everybody else was stopping to change tyres in mid-stage and so on and so forth, Burns and Kankanen just, you know, rolled on. And they had a similar performance. Obviously, the conditions completely different in Argentina. In fact, the mud was so thick that Richard Burns said at one stage it was like driving on ice. But they got the tyres are doing a fantastic job out there, and yeah, I think they just got the solution together. They did have problems, it should be said, on the Friday, the first proper day of competition. We had a super special on the Thursday night, but on the Friday Burns was having difficulties. He was having problems with the switch on the handbrake, which allows him to kick the four-wheel drive in and out, and it's very useful, of course. You can do that when you come to a corner, so you can kick the tail out and go around faster. And he was coming in saying all kinds of words on the radio system. We got a new approach to covering rallying this year on the world scale. We've been trying it for a couple of years now on the British Rally Championship, and indeed on some of the smaller events like the Peugeot Super 106 Cup, which is a feeder, if you like. It's where Burns and the McRae's began. Burns, in fact, was champion of that little championship in the early 90s. What we do is we go up country to the service areas, and we take satellite broadcasting equipment with us, which enables us to come in perfect quality from the service areas. It also means that we're in touch, really far, far more in touch with what the teams and the various protagonists are doing. And of course, we can monitor most of their activity on scanners, so you are continually listening to what the drivers and the teams and the co-drivers have to say. And Richard's language on Friday afternoon was quite strong. He was having a fair amount of problems. But on the Sunday, the final day, the toughest day of the rally, they reversed the order, or changed the order of the Argentine rally for this year. And what they did with it was quite interesting. They put made the last day the toughest of all, including the very last stage, El Condor, as it's known, one of the great stages of the World Rally. Was the final stage of the event, so it couldn't get much tougher if they tried. And yeah, I think, yes, frankly, he did very, very well indeed. Meanwhile, Colin McRae, who of course was the champion back in 1995, and really has been the man in whose shadow Richard Burns has been, well, not walking, driving, I suppose, to make some metaphors, for the last few years. He had another bad rally this time after the win last time out in Catalonia. We'd hoped that his run of bad luck had ended. In fact, I think a lot of us were thinking that McRae could well be up for a victory in Argentina, but he had a very bad smash on the second day, coming out of a water splash. He more or less nosedived the Ford Focus, did a lot of damage to the front end, and the engine just didn't make it up on Sunday morning.
Yes, so it's one of those things that water splashes have proven over the years to be a problem. I can remember a particular Bunnings stage in the Rally Australia a few years ago, which a number of drivers stalled their cars in, got them waterlogged and couldn't go. And I remember the scene of Carlos Sainz standing at Sotheray waving, saying, don't, and it was too late, splash, splash, they went. But,
well, that wasn't actually the problem. What he did was he nosedived the car into the ground, as it were, coming out of the water splash. Did a lot of damage to the front end. I was down at service just after you brought the car in, and it really was a bit of a mess. And they put a chain to one of the service barges and stretched the car straight again. It was extraordinary. I'm always humbled when I see these rally mechanics in action. In fact, I watched them change an entire gearbox on McRae's car in under 6 minutes. He just doesn't bear thinking about when you see how long sometimes it takes garages to service your ordinary car, what these guys could do in a few moments. But I think what happened was that the engine got a big knock, and they probably lost some coolant then, got through to the service area. But, you know, when that kind of thing happened, the car stood overnight then in Parc Fermé, came out the next day, sounded very sweet at the start of the stage, but didn't make it through it. And I think that was McRae's rally run. They've had some problems with the Ford Focus this last 12 months. It's my feeling, and I'm nothing of a technical expert at all, but it's my feeling that the engine which Cosworth built for the Ford Focus is just a bit too delicate for world rallying. It seems to be a very clever and a very quick and a very powerful engine, but I think it's just a bit too, you know, possibly just a bit, it needs to be a bit more rugged and a little less clever, perhaps.
Mm.
It's got to be able to survive going through, the enormous strains and stresses that a rally puts on it. And he's had trouble. He had trouble in Monte Carlo. He was third on the last day, on the final stage. The engine packed up. He was third in Argentina on the last morning, and the engine packed up. And it's getting a bit like a sort of routine. And, you know, you can do without it, really. I'm sure he can. It's very sad for him. I mean, maybe one of the most highly paid rally drivers in the world. But it'd be nice for him to actually finish rallies and be in with a chance of winning them. But hats off to Burns. He did a fantastic performance. And that last day, I mean, we were having trouble, as I say, seeing across the car park, and driving between the service areas was one of those extraordinary experiences I've ever had in 30-odd years of motoring. The conditions absolutely indescribable in terms of fog, the thickest I've ever seen. And yet Burns and Robert Reed's co-driver driving through the stages at a colossal pace, and really, they're on a different planet to the rest of us.
Now, of course, while Colin McRae had some trouble there, his younger brother, Alistair, went through to get Hyundai's first championship points in their new Accent World Rally car. And it was interesting there the fact that Alistair finished 7th and his teammate, Kenneth Eriksson, finished 8th in the other of the Hyundai, so a good double finishing there for Hyundai with that new car.
Yeah, and they had a bit of problems as well on the second afternoon, because a group of fans is a curious word to use, we had some problems with a group of kids, I think it was kids, it's hard to tell, throwing stones, and in some cases things the size of house bricks, at the cars as they went by. And Eriksson was one of the people who got not a brick through the windscreen, but a brick on the windscreen, which is the last thing that you actually need. Peter Solberg, who drives not a works Ford, but a fully prepared factory Ford in the championship, there's some extraordinary footage which I've seen a little later from the in-car camera, which is looking back at the drivers. And you see, I think that they thought their last moment had come, because they throw up their hands in horror as this thing hits the screen. And in fact, the problem problems with fans have been something which the whole sport is starting to worry about. I mean, that's inexcusable behaviour. We can't have any of it, and thankfully we don't get any of that kind of stuff in the British rally, the Network Q rally of Great Britain. But what we are seeing at the moment is an enormous growth in the popularity of rallying worldwide, and spectators are coming out in their tens of thousands. In fact, in Portugal, three rallies ago, it's reckoned that 1 in 10 of the population of Portugal turned out to watch the rally. Okay, they only have 9 million people living there, but 900,000 people were watching the rally. And these kind of spectator numbers are giving great problems to the organisers of the sport. And we've had an announcement this week here in the UK for the final round, the Network Q Rally of Great Britain, that they're actually going to charge spectators for the first time to come and watch rallying, to watch the British rally. Purely and simply, the organisers, the Motorsports Association, say to control the numbers of people in the forest, because they're having to, we've had several stages on several rallies cancelled this year because of spectator overcrowding. And indeed, cars brought into the stages by, this sounds bizarre, doesn't it, by spectators a few hours before the start of a particular stage, and parked too near the route the rally cars take, often in positions where if a rally car got into trouble, the rally car might go on or go off, as it were. So for all these reasons, we're going to limit the number of spectators watching the rally of Great Britain this year, which seems a terrible shame, because you just think the sport, which will always be the shadow of Formula One, would need all the spectators it can actually muster, but you've got to balance that against safety. We've also had a couple of announcements here, and I say here because I'm in Cardiff this weekend, that Cardiff will be the headquarters for the Network Q rally for the next 3 years. They were, of course, the host city for the Rugby World Cup, of blessed memory, and before that they hosted the European Summit. They're looking forward to looking after the Network Q and all the rally competitors for the next 3 years, and in fact the entire rally will take place in Wales for the next 3 years. It won't even go to Britain.